This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Space City, a NWA On Demand podcast with me, Pete, and of course I'm with my buddy Johnny. Johnny, man, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Just back from a week off of work and ready to talk some NWA wrestling.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah, let's get right in because we had some audio difficulties last time, so we weren't able to drop last week, so we're doing double duty, and we'll see how hopefully this turns out better. But we're going to start off right here in 1979, September 14th, 1979. And we have kind of midget matches right off the bat. And we got this revelation. Ivan the Terrible is a complete stud. I mean, that's all can say. Let's start off with Tiny Tom versus Ivan the Terrible. What did you think of this, man? I was so impressed with it with Ivan the Terrible here.
It was great. And now this is obviously not the same Ivan the Terrible we've talked about, the heavyweight. But there's a midget Ivan the Terrible. And at first I'm like, who's this guy? Because let's face it, most midget wrestlers you've heard of, you know, but never heard of this guy. And he's an amazing, amazing entertainer. This match is like a living Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yep.
And he's Yosemite Sam.
That's okay. a great comparison, you know?
He's amazing here. He looks like a little Buzz Sawyer. Yep. When he comes in, because he's wearing a bandana. And apparently there's a rule against bandanas. And Bronco Lubitsch rips the bandana off his head, reveals he's totally shaved bald. Everyone laughs at him, and he's freaking out. So, okay. Making fun of the bald guy, old hat. And the beginning of the crowds and the footage that we watched here for this week's stuff, these crowds are batshit. And there's a pissed off teenager in the front row.
Yeah.
Tiny Tom is having his hair pulled and he's yelling, he's grabbed his hair, and he crosses his arms all pissed off.
Yeah.
And of course, then we have Paul Bosch.
Even the old grandma next to him was kind of embarrassed for his behavior.
Oh yeah. Well, we'll get to some behavior later. We got to talk about a certain fan, but Paul Bosch explains his theories of wrestling physics, that when one midget hits another midget, it's just like two regular sized guys hitting each other. It hurts just because they're little. Because they're both little, it hurts just as much. But there's. Paul Bosch also gets in the line. Okay, I'm sorry, I have to go to this. There's this ongoing joke where Ivan is looking up at the ceiling thinking something's up there or is going to fall on him.
Yes.
And he starts it by just suddenly staring up at the lights and acting like there's something up there. The crowd picks up on it, and they keep distracting him by pointing up. Look up, look up there. And he keeps looking up there, and it's driving him crazy. And he's hilarious with this. And Bosch gets off the line. It's like Chicken Little. At least if he's Chicken Little, he's a little chicken. And I was like, A for effort. Okay. I said it would have been funny if all of a sudden the entire lighting rig just crashed out of the middle of the ring.
Squashes them, midgets.
Squashes them all. Bronco Lou just stands there and leaves.
Yeah, it's like they'd have Wizard of Oz flashbacks.
But I just, before we move on to the next match, because it continues with them, or not the next match, but
yeah.
What you have to say, is there's some sequences between Tiny Tom and Ivan. I mean, where, especially in the first half of the match, that you might say it's comedy shtick, but they are so slick, especially Ivan.
Yeah.
That it's just, there's they're doing the old spot where he gets stomped on the guy's hands. Tiny Tom, number one, Tiny Tom gets his fingers stomped on. He sells it like a cartoon. He cramps his fingers as if they're like, as if like when in Tom and Jerry, when Tom's paws get hit, they turn red and swell, you know, and he's doing that and showing the ref and blowing on his fingers. He's literally doing a cartoon. And so then he goes to do it. And of course, it all backfires on him. He goes to stomp, gets kicked, punches, bumps on his ass. And the transition work in these two guys' work is just as smooth as any grappling that, you know, is out there. Because it is just one right after another of these moves that some would say, oh, that's just comedy. Comedy's hard.
Yeah. Okay.
And this didn't look hokey to have two midgets doing midget shit, you know, shtick. And make it not look hokey. And then when they go into the end, the second half of the match, and they're really beating each other up, you know, with no comedy, you know, it looks like good old fashioned wrestling.
Yeah.
But when they're getting, when they're doing the so-called comedy bits, the work between these two guys is so smooth. And Tiny Tom is every blonde haired, good looking baby face without a lot of personality. And Ivan is just dripping with charisma. He's got that entire arena in his hands. Paul Bosch, you can tell, it loves him, this guy. And it's amazing. We've never heard of him.
No. You know,
it's something.
I was blown away by him. I'm like, first of all, he's playing up this first off, Paul Bosch's midget jokes never get old. I don't care if they're not politically correct. They're awesome. Okay, let's get that out of the way. You got to get over it if you're going to defend all the little guys or whatever. But my God.
Before you go on, he always backs it up with saying about how athletic and tough they are.
Yeah, they're never mean-spirited, you know. It's just and stuff. It's not like he's doing it to be mean or anything. I was just, yeah, I mean, obviously he cares about him because he books him. And they work really hard on these Houston shows. Like the midgets that we've gotten so far, I think I love watching them. More than on anything else on any of the Death Valley Driver 80 sets. These guys, I think the midgets, the way when they work Houston, smoke them. And I think because Paul Bosch really respects the act, you know.
He says in the next match, he's like, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I love the midgets.
Yep, okay. He does. Because
he flat out says it, sorry. Yeah. But here's the thing I just thought is before you go on, maybe one of the tropes of midget wrestling is the whole involve the referee deal. And Bronco Lubitsch ain't getting down on his fucking hands and knees and rolling around with no fucking midgets. He barely wants to get down on his knees to do a three count.
Yeah, so not at this point in the game.
They've got other things to do.
Yeah, very true. But, you were talking about earlier about the Ivan reveal of his bald. He milks that like a seasoned vaudevillian stage actor, you know? I mean, it was just incredible how much he played up to that. I mean, Kurt Angle with the wig, we wishes he could play. I mean, he got a lot of props how well he played it up. He's no Ivan the Terrible. Ivan the Terrible was incredible on building up the reveal and milking in the glory, and then when his hair, the bandana comes off, and his total embarrassment and wanting to hide. I mean, it was just incredible, just milking the crowd all on personality and facials, pretty much this is just a lot of shtick. He's shown off his charisma. The dude knows how to play to the crowd. And I just love him. Ivan just totally carrying this match. I mean, Tiny Tom is just the other midget. I mean, he does stuff well, don't get me wrong. But this is definitely the Ivan show. And I'm loving the sky is falling gimmick was tremendous. I've never seen it, really. And they're able to do this stupid spot that makes no sense.
It goes out loud. It's great.
And makes awesome out of it. I mean, all I can say was this is entertaining. I'm already giggling about it. I gave it like 2.5 stars, and I probably really underrated it because of how awesome it really was. it was just tremendous wrestling. And then we go and we get the boys, and now we'll do the other singles match first, which doesn't include the midgets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Tiger Conway Jr. versus Killer Brooks, which also sets up with these guys working with the midgets in a mixed tag later on. And you know what? This is one of Jesus, I'm going to give you Killer Tim Brooks better matches. And
you know what? It was so hard for you to say Killer Tim Brooks had a good match. Literally couldn't get the words out of your mouth.
And I'll say he even had a better one because he has Ivan the Terrible as his partner who carries him. But this is a pretty good singles match for Tim Brooks. And I'm Tiger's been a guy we liked as a babyface. Curious on what he was able to do. I thought it was cool that they teased this little dog collar match, and then they don't go there because I guess Brooks and Brody just had one, and Brooks is using the headlock early, and I'm liking the jockeying on the mat for position early on. They didn't do it long enough where it got old. I like Brooks feeding Tiger early with those deep arm drags, which are beautiful, and they look like they hurt at the same time. But then Brooks transitions, and he starts working the back. He's throwing knees to the back. Then he's using headbutts to the back and forearms to the back. And a backbreaker gets two. Really good near fall. And he's really nice working it. Then he transitions to the chin lock. And now he's working the neck area along with the back. And now Brooks is cranking the neck. And I liked all that. And I like now Brooks is now trying to cause Tiger not to be able to breathe and cut off a circulation, and he's cutting off by forearming the nose and kind of like cutting off his air supply. I like that, and I like Brooks really roughing up in the ropes. I thought his work was really smart here. And then we get Tiger's comeback. It was a lot of fun. It has a lot of energy, and the crowd is totally with him. I like the post-match as a draw. Brooks is posing like he won, which I love when a heel does that. Overall, I thought this was effective. It wasn't a classic, but Tiger proves he continues a good hand in the ring, and this is Brooks actually showing good psychology and telling a story in the match. I give it about another 2.5-star match. Good, solid stuff from the guys. What you make of it?
It was okay. They weren't calling. Paul wasn't calling them dog collar matches. They're dog fight matches,
yeah,
which kind of sounds even cooler, to be perfectly honest with you.
It does.
And the thing is, he just had one with Brody or something, and he's walking around because he's pissed off about how it ended. As far as the moves go in the match, I love that at one point Brooks has got him in a chin lock, and he's punching him in the back of the neck while he's got him in the chin lock. I was like, that's nasty. Yeah, that's cool, and it was all the match was fine. You know, it was what it was. Both guys professional, putting on a wrestling match, but the finish was weird because they were trying to count down to a draw.
Yeah.
Number one, you looked at the time of the match; it was like 15 minutes, and you knew that this was going to be our draw. So they were trying to work to it, and Tiger goes for a pinfall and lifts up Brooks to give him more punishment like a heel would do. And then they just sort of circle each other. The timing was off on the draw. And as you mentioned, it was that the second the bell rang, Brooks shoots his arms up into the air like he won. You know, he didn't do it afterwards. Ding, ding, ding. And he just goes, I win.
Yeah.
And I like that. But, otherwise, I was kind of – it was like when I was sitting down to watch all the footage, sometimes there's the first match you watch and you got to kind of ease into watching the wrestling. I was like, okay, this is my popcorn match of the evening.
Gotcha. That's fair enough. But this leads to – and all these three matches, we're going to the third one. We're all on September 14th, 1979, all on the same show. And now we get the mixed tag with Ivan and Killer Tim Brooks versus Tiny Tom and Tiger Conway Jr. And God, this ruled. Tell us about it, Johnny.
This match was fucking awesome. I'll let you handle, of course, the back and forth of the moves. One particular move we're going to talk about, we're going to let you get to that. But there's a kid at the beginning, and he's at ringside. He's jawing with Ivan, like saying, "Come on out here, I'll fuck you up." And he's like pointing at himself to show that he's taller than the midget. And a little later, I guess he's doing it again. And Paul says, "Like, there's a young man out there, jawing up at Ivan. He better be careful because Ivan was definitely, you know, beat him up or something or handle him." I was like, "Yeah, you bet your ass. The kid may be taller to him." Number one, these midgets are grown men who are strong as fuck, dude. And they probably know how to handle themselves. You bet they know how to handle themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And you're a professional wrestler in the 70s, and you're a midget, you better be able to fucking handle yourself. And Paul, and I've got to get to this in a second, but at one point, Brooks saves Ivan, who is amazing in this match, by the way. Ivan is all, like, tag himself in, and his legs are rubbery, and tags himself right back out, and all kinds of stuff. He's great.
Incredible, yeah.
He's so good.
He carries this action completely.
He's, when Brooks has got Tiger in the ropes, he's running around biting Tiger in the ass. He, like, accidentally headbutts himself against Tiger. So they didn't have Tiger headbutt him, which would be mean. He does it to Tiger, which was stupid.
Yeah.
And he falls off. He's the guy's a goddamn genius in the ring. This guy, he is the big, a new big revelation for us.
Yeah.
But Brooks saves him one time, and Paul goes, "Brooks saved his midget bacon." And is that really little bacon? But then we get into this, and we've talked about this before, but I love it. Paul Bosch, in 1979, mind you, is fully aware that they're actually supposed to be called dwarves. And that's what they preferred at the time, was dwarves. Midget was not. And he says, "I just want to say, I know that Ivan and Tiny Tom are actually dwarves, but we call them midgets because we call it midget wrestling. I know I'm wrong. You don't have to send me any letters, but that's what we're going to call them for simplification. And also, fuck you. I'm Paul fucking Bosch. I'll say what I fucking want." It was his really nice way of saying, "And you can go fuck yourself." But it is hilarious because it's like if you had a bunch of different Asian wrestlers. Say Tiger Chung Lee was down there and he's calling him Japanese. And he goes, "I know he's Korean, but here for simplification, they're all Japanese." It's the same logic. And it's hilarious. And there's a certain spot, and you're going to get to it, but Paul's word, Paul Bosch, I've never heard of this man. In all this footage we watch, he loses it.
Not only does he lose it, the crowd. I've never heard a crowd pop so big for that spot. Just for that spot, but I've never heard a crowd go all laugh out loud like that.
They were having a ball.
Yeah.
And you got to figure, this is a crowd that just sat through a draw between the heavyweights.
Yeah.
A midget match, and now, hey, just in case, here's all four guys. Yeah. You know, the crowd could easily be, and everyone's work was good, but it was held together by Brooks and, most importantly, Ivan.
It would have been terrible.
Yeah. Ivan held together this match. This was all on his tiny shoulders, and he's a fucking god. And we'll get to the move that happened, but Bosch laughs.
Incredible.
I think for a good 30 seconds, which doesn't sound like a long time, but think about it.
Yeah.
He's cracking up on live on mic, just in hysteria. And not fake laughing, not, isn't this
entertaining?
He's belly laughing at this. And that's when he goes, "Look, everybody, I love the midgets."
Yeah, okay, he's belly laughing, but the crowd, they erupt in laughter on this one.
Erupts.
Have you ever heard a crowd like a comedy spot get over like that? I've never. I mean, I've seen comedy spots get over, but for a crowd
maybe,
size,
but,
I mean, that was insane.
Not in recent years, and not with something like this. But
no.
But yeah, I'll let you get
to it. Crowd with Paul Bosch all erupting at the same time.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Let's just get to it. We'll talk about it, then we'll get to that. At one point, they're going to do the thing where they're going to have a chicken fight. And Tiny Tom is on Tiger's shoulders. So then first you got Ivan is going to, like, hop up on Tim's back. So when he goes to does it, he jumps up and just runs and plasters, like, the coyote running into a wall into his big ass. Boom. And they go, And then they turn around and the baby faces. And here's Tiny Tom. Tiny Tom puts Tiger fucking Conway on his shoulders and walks out to the middle of the ring. That's a strong dude. That's amazing. There was no tricks there. Tiger wasn't helping him.
Yeah.
So then they're like, okay. And they go in the corner, and Tim goes to get on Ivan's shoulders.
And first off, but Ivan's milking it. He's flexing his muscles, showing how strong. And then tell him, go on, John.
He's flexing because he's jacked. And Tim goes to get on his shoulders, and they don't play any whoa. He goes up on him after he's flexing and immediately flattens him.
Yeah.
Immediately he drops him and flattens him. It's hilarious. It's something that sounds so stupid, but to see the way they did it, especially Ivan, it's legitimately hilarious. And Paul Bosch goes into hysterics for 30 seconds.
Think the Three Stooges could do that spot.
Come on now. Let's not get crazy.
Incredible slapstick here.
That is my religion.
I know, Johnny. This is not fighting words.
I was saying it's apparently that Ivan is a member of my church. Let's just say. And he's high up in that church. And then let you take over this, and then we're going to move on. But revelation of the night show, or for a while now, we have our little list. Tiger's on that list of revelations.
Yep.
Paul Bosch has been on that list.
Yep.
Ivan is on that list. And that's not us being wink-wink and being silly. This guy
Watch Ivan matches
amazing
all day long. I mean,
and it's not his moves. And he's very athletic.
Yeah.
But that's not what it's about. This guy, and apparently, Paul said that you couldn't really hear him, but he had a very loud voice, too. So he's engaging the crowd verbally.
Oh, he's working them. You could tell. Oh, yeah.
And this guy, this little person, who we've never heard of, mind you, has the entire Houston Coliseum in the palm of his hand. It's something to see.
It's a masterful. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, as I'm with you, Ivan's been a total revelation. I kind of get like a Bill Dundee vibe from him a little bit.
midget?
No, you're not being in the midget size, but being like that energy, ball energy type of worker, and being able to do so many different things.
And this isn't even a joke. Maybe he has a background in the circus and the carnival as well.
Could be. I loved Ivan biting Tiger right on the ass to start. I mean, you can't. Nothing wrong with that. Ivan tries to set up a Brooks sneak attack that fails. Not only is he doing this, but he's even being the fall guy for spots for his own partner. I mean, freaking ridiculous. The midget interference spots were great. Tiny Tom with his beard pool that I loved. And then Ivan's kind of like pinballing where Tiger's chasing him. And then Tom would cut him off, and he'd go reverse, and then scream, and then come back, and go back. It was just pinballing between the two without getting hit, because he didn't know which was the better answer on who he was going to run into.
And even, I'm sorry, this is the Ivan show. At one point during that spot, he has only one way to go, and that's down.
Yeah.
Off to the floor, which is dangerous. And he indicates to the two babyface, what do you want me to do, fall?
Yeah.
They do the spot again in a couple minutes, and he does fall. He milked it from spot to spot for that big bump. God damn.
Yeah, this is like
Who is this guy?
Yeah, this is kind of like, it's almost like Arn Anderson psychology here in a way.
There you go.
When he's doing his comedy spots. But, you know, Arn would get a lot more serious and stuff. But Arn was a master of milking funny moments. And I this is just incredible. And then we talk about that. I like the reversals of the roles where the midget is the base, and then we talked about that spot. But I also loved how Bosch goes, "Oh, they crashed. Brooks is too fat." Love that line.
Tell you this, because the first words he gets out after he's laughing, he goes, "Because Ivan is, he's telling Brooks that
he's too fat."
He's too fat.
Yeah, it was so awesome. which just makes it even funnier at home. And, I mean, I'm not kidding, folks. You guys got to check this match out just to hear the pop, the laughter of the crowd on the spot, along with Paul Bosch is dying, just belly laughing, belly aching laughter from Paul Bosch, and the crowd all in unison laughing their ass off at the spot. And Ivan just milked it, and it was awesome. This match ruled. I gave it 3.5 stars. All fun. Had a smile on my face the whole entire time. This is just incredible. I can't think of a better mixed tag I've ever seen, honestly. This is really about as high end of a mixed tag as I've ever seen. Have you ever seen a better mixed tag, you think?
With the midgets?
Yeah.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, this thing was just...
Not that I can think of.
All level stuff. I remember Matt D texted me when these things came down. He's like, Johnny will be happy. Midgets. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And now I'm happy because we got to see Ivan the Terrible, this incredible worker, just wrestling, comedy genius, master of improvisation, master of just being able to play to the crowd, just a genius. Just an ultimate showman.
And how about the height he took on his backdrop bumps?
Huge.
Huge height, lands as flat as a board for flat back bump. I'm not kidding.
On the flat back bump I really liked on him was when he climbed up on Brooks's shoulders and Tiny Tom punched him, and he does that fall, that big, aching flat back bump. Right. I mean, it's just a little poetry, man. All right, man, that's Ivan the Terrible, you're a stud. That's all I can say. Mm-hmm. Let's move over to August now. And we're looking at August 8th, 1986. And we're going to look at Gustavo Mendoza versus Gary Young. Man, this was a pretty bad match. This is your epitome of a popcorn bout, your Coca-Cola bout. The only thing going for this was Gary Young was billed from Houston, Texas, so he got the hometown pop. But this is just boring stuff. Gustavo beating Young early the punch. Young turns the tide with a slam of his own. This is your get everyone to their seats match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to get these type of matches. And do you have any detailed thoughts on this thing?
That's it. It's the very definition of a 1980s opening match between two sort of names. That's it. Tommy Gilbert's introduced as a distinguished Tommy Gilbert for some fucking reason. And just the one thing is the guy with the house lights, which was amazing.
That's all right.
It was the beginning of the show.
Yep.
And the match is starting, and we have our beloved Houston announcer, who will yell at the crowd quite often. Get in your fucking seats and you don't throw shit, dum-dums.
Yeah.
And he's saying, could you please turn down the house lights? And they're not going down. And by the last time he's yelling into that microphone, can you please turn down? You know he wants to say the motherfucking... Because Paul Bosch is yelling at him, by the way. And then the house lights go down. And you hear him almost exasperated say, thank you, over the public address system. It's hilarious.
That was the most fun part of the match.
That was the best part of the match, to be perfectly honest with you.
But that leads us to a one-man gang versus Coco Beware, same show, 8-8-86. And we start out, and Ware's dancing with the fans, and I'm loving it. And then in the ring, Coco's full on hit and run with the big man charging, and Gang's frailing out Frankenstein, doing the type of thing. You're too quick for me. I loved it. The guys really do a great job milking all that type of stuff up for all it's worth. I mean, they just build a whole match around it, which was really nice. Eventually, it's smash time for One Man Gang, and he's using his size to beat down Coco, and Ware starts a comeback only for Akbar to trip him. It really feels like we're going into second gear, but no, this gets the DQ and just an absolutely drizzling shit finish. I thought this was another fun One Man Gang performance, and I thought Coco was really good as the undersized babyface. Good, solid, 2.5-star match. You know, real entertaining. Had a lot of energy. But yeah, that freaking finish was shitty. But it actually comes out. We see it later on in the, I think next month or so after, and it's actually kind of a payoff to it in a way. Well, what you make of it, man?
It's so amazing to think, you know, that these guys in 2 years are both going to be in WWF, along with the rest of the UWF exodus that happened over the course of 2 years. And we mentioned this before, Coco's awesome. We've talked about it before, but he's small, but he's jacked, man. He's solid muscle. So you can buy it, at least in that day. You could totally buy that he could beat this guy because he can do amazing high-flying moves, and he's got muscles. You know, if you're a kid, you can believe in Coco. And One Man Gang's got the fucking Jolly Roger flag, I think, here. Or that was the other match. But anyway, it's awesome. Coco coming out to Morris Day always rules. That's why I love that the music's on this. You know, nobody fucked that up. Again, imagine this is Coco's role. This is a territory of big guys. We've talked about that. WWF, because pretty much everywhere Coco went, he'd be in the role that he had. You know, a lower card underdog babyface, except Memphis, because Memphis, he's not smaller than everybody else. That's, you know, and we saw that in Memphis. You know, but for anyone who was like, oh, they could have used him better. Well, in that day and age, they used him pretty much as good as they could.
Yeah, he was kind of almost like a gatekeeper because he, the WWF, he put over new acts when they'd come in, but he'd be over enough and he'd be able to keep his heat because he had a cool gimmick and he could sing and he had a lot of, he had natural charisma. So he was one of those guys who, because of his size back in the day where it meant something, they really couldn't push him to the moon. But where he was in the card, he did well and made good money while he wrestled. Yeah.
Shit, he was the headliner on the second wrestling album. Yeah. So we've talked about Coco a lot. He's awesome. We love him.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look at a couple promos real quick. And that's Bruiser Brody and Nick Bockwinkel, both building up, sounds like a rematch in a way, but talking about their last match they had that ended up obviously in a total schmoz. And I mean, Bockwinkel, what can we say? The guy is incredible. He might be the best ever interview at talking down to the crowd, if that makes sense. So he always, his shtick always played well, like in places like Memphis and Houston, because of like the Southern type of, I mean, you can easily make fun of Southern accents constantly, and then the culture that was in the Southern prevalence, like with the
in Memphis.
Memphis and Texas.
And especially Texas.
Yeah. Especially. Give me a break. Memphis is pretty, I don't know, man.
No, I'm saying him. The way he talks down.
Yeah, oh, he's great. He's fantastic in this promo. I mean, tell us about it. I mean, he's just, he even looks like he's like with his nose is up in the air. I mean,
he looks like something stinks.
Yeah, I mean, just fantastic, yeah.
But he's like, so basically, he explained to Mean Gene, who's saying that they're in California at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's the AWA studio. That they're gonna be there's going to be a rematch for the title in Houston. And Bockwinkel's complaining that Paul Bosch, this isn't fair. You know, he's that Bruiser Brody fragrantly violated the rules. I don't respect him because he's not a wrestler. The name of the game is wrestling. And then Mean Gene gives him some lip about something.
That's a good Bock. I like your Bock. I'll give you 4 stars on that one.
Thank you. And Mean Gene says some shit. And Bock goes, just can it. We don't need your comments. He said, just can it, you.
Yeah.
And Mean Gene does this great look. Okay. And he explains, well, maybe Bruiser Brody will have some class rub off on him if he's in the ring with me. And he goes to explain that Texas and that these Texan fans to cheer for a man like this shows the mentality of the common Texan. And you think, let's face it, Texas is at least, 100 years behind everybody else. Dying. It's so funny. Because here's the thing. when you're pissing off, I think even in Memphis and stuff, people are going to laugh more. But you know it and I know it. People in Texas have a fucking attitude about being in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's a pride to it. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah. You know,
don't mess with Texas. Bigger. I mean, it's a logo. I mean, it's a freaking theme.
Yeah, half of you people think you should be your own fucking country. So, come on. We all know it. So this is really getting under wrestling fans' skin. Not only is this snooty, rich Californian is a cheater, he's also a great wrestler. You gotta kind of admit it, and that hurts. And he's insulting Texas. And the way some of these crowds, as we've seen, sometimes I wonder if Buck could have to get an armed escort back to his, Lincoln,
right?
To my Lincoln Continental.
Oh,
you Texans and your pickup trucks. I drive a Lincoln. I made that one up all my own. That's good. But yeah, this is 2 minutes, and it's Bach at his best.
Yep. What do you think of the Brody one, man?
Well, the Brody was it was with Paul, and it's the Texan response, basically, because Paul points out that the realities of the match was that Nick got himself disqualified on purpose. And he goes, and these people, the fans I've talked to here, you know, they all think and they all know that Nick Bockwinkel got himself disqualified on purpose. He goes, and costing you the American Wrestling Alliance Championship. And I fully, I go, Alliance? It's Association. And then I pictured, I know it's called the Association. I don't want any letters or phone calls. I call it Association, the Alliance, for simplification's sake. And that's what we call a callback, you know, in the business. But he calls the belt the big broad belt. And Brody then goes, he's not yelling too much. He goes, it's a response to Bach saying how stupid all Texans are. He goes, these people have been coming to wrestling for over 30 years. Some of them in the same seats for 30 years. They know wrestling. They're not dumb. These are smart people. And I'm like, yes, about wrestling. Okay. Bach was insinuating about everything, your entire culture. Okay, we'll give you that one. These people know they're wrestling. And that's just firing up the crowd for Brody. And again, Brody as like the hero of a territory. Like, we saw him as a babyface in World Class, but he was never the main hero. And to see him as a main hero here with all of Texas behind Bruiser Brody, that's always unique. We've talked about that a lot. And it was a good promo. I really enjoyed his as well. I mean, Box is just...
it's an A+, yeah.
It's as good as it gets.
Yeah.
But this is a really good Brody promo.
Yeah, agreed. I liked it. We had Box. It's just... Bach, you know. He's a god.
Thank you, Mr. Schermacher. You, sir, are the exception to the rule of Texans.
Oh, man, on that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse. the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back, and we're looking at, we're in now September of 1986, September 21st, 1986. And the first match we're going to look at is the incomparable Missy Hyatt, the bodacious Missy Hyatt versus Dark Journey. Man, Johnny, talk about this match, man. How he
she was announced as the luscious Missy Hyatt, or as Paul would describe her as the AWA belt, the big broad that Missy Hyatt.
I've heard so many ways to describe her. I mean, you've heard so many.
Well, this was the point. And before anyone, well, I don't think Graham listens to this. So this ain't sexist. It's just an observation. This is the point where Missy Hyatt got hot, because she never dressed hot or looked that hot to me in world class.
Yeah.
She wore those jumpsuits. She looked too top heavy and everything. She hits world class and just like, ho, 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 you know, and this is where that's happening. And I'm remembering this because I was 16 and I love me some Missy Hyatt.
Yep. Every young man loved Missy Hyatt.
It was because for a couple of years we were told that Sunshine was gorgeous. We're like, get the fuck out of here.
Exactly.
Go fuck yourself.
She's cute at best, you know.
At best. That Precious seems was like, okay.
Yeah, I might, you know, like, if I was back in the day, if I had gear goggles, I might hit it on Sunshine or Precious.
Oh, no, I think Sunshine could tear your ass up, man. She knows what she's doing. That Stella Mae French taught her a few things on those trucking runs. But, looking for male lot lizards and shit. But this feud was so over. We've joked about it. We talked about the stiffness of Dark Journey being a fucking lunatic.
They've run it twice down in Houston, this match.
Yeah, but I remembered this at the time, and on the TV, this shit was heated, and it was because of the vignettes. They did the vignettes where Missy was Dark Journey's maid for a day thing, and that shit was over, and it's super huge. You know, Missy was having to wash the floor while Dark Journey tried to dance in the corner. You know, you can't even dance, Dark Journey.
That was horrible, those dancing.
Well, I thought you'd say my Missy Hyatt was horrible. I was like, hey, come on, how can I do her voice? Listen to me. But we'll talk about John Tatum is the guy. He's the conductor out there.
Much better than Sting was whatchamacallit match.
Oh, yeah. But because you got Tatum out there, missing links in the corner doing his shit, you know, for DJ. But John Tatum is orchestrating this entire match like a conductor. And look, there's a great point where – and the place is going apeshit. The guy's yelling, sit down, over the PA. And Missy takes a powder, and Tatum shows her a rear arm lock, like a half Nelson sort of, and a go-behind. You know, like, he's chosen now to train his girlfriend.
Not pre-match, not before the match.
Hold on a second. But he's great because the crowd sees this. It's all pantomime.
Yeah.
And it's silent movie acting for everyone. And he shows her it. And she goes in and she gets that move on Dark Journey. But she reverses it right away because Dark Journey's also, you know, she's been studying in the ring, I guess.
Missy Link has been showing her
a few fucking moves, you know.
This is the headbutt. This is the running headbutt. This is the diving headbutt.
This is the standing headbutt. Is this all headbutts, sir? Listen. Tomorrow we're doing green face paint, okay? So just shut up and go over there and try not to be a terrible dancer. Okay? So he does the same thing with the body slam. But after the body slam, that's when Dark Journey loses her fucking shit. Because up until this point, they're actually trying to work a match.
Yeah.
Instead of just the mugging that we've seen. And the mugging happens. And Dark Journey goes ape shit. And she's ripping her hair. You see Missy to be like, get this bitch off of me.
Yep.
You know, she's... And Tatum comes in and saves it. Because he's like, this is my creation. And it's been going quite well. I'm going as the guy orchestrating this match. And he does. It ends with him accidentally hitting Missy and she gets beat. And Missy then is just like, I think this is an abusive situation because she gets pissed. It was like, okay, it was an accident. It was like, this isn't the first time this has happened, John. You always say you're going to change and you never do. I'll change this time, baby. Sad situation. And that just leads to her splitting with and totally going with Eddie Gilbert. Because that was the split. That's what I liked about that, too. It was like heels feuding with each other. Watts was not afraid to have heels feud with each other.
Yeah, totally. It was cool. And it was state of the art.
Loved it.
And it's really funny because John Tatum made a habit of doing these type of matches with valets for the rest of his career. And it's odd that it's like reliving something that had to have hurt because he was the one who lost the girl to Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah, a guy, abusers never stop fucking abusing.
He did it with Tessa and Bill Dundee and some other ones too.
He's got a long history. He needs to really take a deep look at himself.
I enjoyed this too. I like Missy using the Gucci purse and Journey's revenge spot, and she uses the purse. But then Journey does like this whiplash to Missy. It looks like she almost rips her hair out and breaks her neck at the same time. I thought this was a perfect finish to tease a breakup. The crowd was hot, and the girls did what they needed to do. You know, they weren't reinventing the wheel, and we weren't expecting some, you know, incredible Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch type of match. You're expecting that these girls, they did what they did. They did a match where two girls who hate each other are going to fight.
Well, this was the best. I mean, they were valets. You know, it's a valet versus valet match, and
which has always been a thing that got over really well in Texas. I think one of the first places to get over these type of things.
Well, it's you Texans.
If you look over to the Chris Adams, Jimmy Garvin, Sunshine Precious thing.
Oh yeah, it's always been. But this, of all the ones I've seen, I've seen a bunch of their stuff. I remember from when I was a kid. We've seen it on this. The first three quarters of this was well worked given it's two non-wrestlers in the ring, and it's all John Tatum again. It's all him just orchestrating it from the outside.
Yeah, totally carrying it. The next match we're going to get is Terry Gordy versus One Man Gang for the UWF title. This is a pretty damn good match. It's a Battle of the Bulls. Same date, 9/21/86. Totally battle of the bulls here. Both guys are on big hands. Gordy gets the early advantage, and I really liked how they milked One Man Gang finally take the bump. Like, it took him a few times and finally takes the bump. You don't want the big man to go down too easily. I absolutely loved Akbar's trip to set up One Man Gang's heat, which if you go back... Because the crowd even reacted to it, because like last time he got him a DQ, but no, here it was actually just to set up the heat. So after the actual trip actually has actually even more heat than normally would have got him. Gordy's busted open, and I dig blood, but it kind of feels like it wasn't earned here yet. I do like One Man Gang working the cut though, and Gordy throwing huge bombs in the comeback, and now Gang's busted open himself. The ring breaks. Akbar is in, two bloody ass mofos throwing bomb and using the ring. There was a lot to like, though my expectations I think might have been a little too high for the match. Give it 2, 3, 4 stars. I enjoyed the short sprint brawl that we got. It was really well worked though. I just thought Gordy got busted open a little too early or off a shot that really didn't earn it. What were your thoughts here?
Oh, yeah, this is the one where Gang's got the Jolly Roger in the ring, so that's cool. And speaking of the heels versus heels at once, this is that. And I was wondering, because I remember watching at the time, and I remember thinking, even as a 16-year-old, I was like, well, who are they cheering for? You know, I like it, you know, because I was a heel fan. I was like, I want to see two heels fight. But I was like, I wonder how that works in that crowd. Who are they cheering for? Because both guys are hated. And then I would imagine they're going to lean towards the Freebirds because the Freebirds, they're not Akbar, at least. Akbar's a dirty Arab, you know.
Yeah, and he's in the and, Texas. Yeah. And,
but it also, this is also playing into some world-class stuff because the Freebirds, during their main heel run, they had a little run against Devastation Incorporated. Yep. They've always been at each other's throats. They don't like each other. They're rival gangs. They both hate the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
They don't like each other one bit either. They hate each other too. And in world class, the fans definitely chose the Freebirds as the baby faces in those matches. And it, probably I'm sure they're doing that here with Gordy. Gang is super, super bloody. And they do the ref bump and everything. But then that turnbuckle shot where Gordy goes into the buckle and the buckle breaks and explodes. And it looks awesome.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just end there because as he's bumping away and the turnbuckle is breaking, Gang's already charging in with his head down. And Gordy gets out of the way and Gang spears his shoulder into the bare metal post. And it looks awesome. And he tumbles out of the ring and he's covered in blood. And that's the end of it. Schmaz. But, if you like watching two giant motherfuckers bleed all over each other while clubbering, this is your match.
Damn
straight. I loved it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Don't get me wrong. But now we're going to move into December 25th, 1985. And we have, right off the bat, we have, we're going to look at Mass Superstar versus Al Perez. And these guys were actually feuding over the belts. It was Mass Superstar and Dick Murdoch. And they were feuding with Al Perez and, what's his name? And Wendell Cooley.
Oh, really?
Where, yeah, I'm actually feuding over the tag belts. But, man, I was kind of curious on what they could do here.
Dick Perez and Cooley used to do the Killer Bees gimmick with the masks, but they didn't even need the masks.
Yeah, I know. Exactly so identical. Like... Yeah, I know. Right? Oh, man. Little twin magic. I thought these guys did a good job working the opening headlock. I like Superstar pulling the hair. It is a nice little heel touch. Perez throws a really nice punch early on, and Perez is a baby face, but his facials like are screaming, "Man, you're a heel!" So
I know,
like he's just a
I
terrible
know.
Baby face. Superstar picks up on the one fan, and that's really behind Al, and he starts beating the crap out of him right in front of her, hoping her anger would spread with the crowd, which it did. So it just shows what a master crowd psychology, Mass Superstar Bill Heaney really is. The crowd got up for Al's comeback, but it's cut off. The finish got heat, but overall, this is a pretty bland match. Really didn't do anything for me. But I like Mass Superstar. I just thought Al Perez was just garbage. What you think of it, man?
Okay, Al Perez comes out wearing a mesh t-shirt. Gross.
Yeah.
Ugh. Whoever thought that was a good look. You're right. He's such a natural heel. I mean, as bland as Al Perez can be, he should at least be a heel.
Yeah.
He looks like it. I heard a couple of little kids who probably weren't hip to like what was going on, just deciding who to cheer for. There was a couple like little boy voices screaming like, come on, Superstar. Because I guess to them, maybe this guy obviously looks like a villain and this guy looks like a superhero.
Yeah. I know.
You know, so they're cheering for the superhero in a mask. Then there's a guy, they're yelling, "Take off the mask, Al." And then one guy goes, and he's that one guy you used to know back in the day who thinks it's real, probably, but also thinks he's totally in the know about everything. But it's like, yeah, man, you know, there's been three Ultimate Warriors. You know.
Yeah.
he yells, He goes, take off his mask, Al. Huh. We already know what the spoiler looks like. And I'm like, oh, so he's thinking, this mass superstar bullshit ain't fooling me. That's the spoiler.
Oh,
with a different name. You know, he's like nudging the guy next to him with his elbows, like, yeah, man, they're calling him a mass superstar now. That's just a spoiler, I know.
That's Jar Jar Dean. We know it.
I know what he looks like. Darn something. But yeah, the match is what it is. But we are introduced now to the woman of the evening. This chick at ringside.
The one cheering for Al, right?
The one on the rest of this footage who's losing her shit.
Yeah.
She's got glasses and short brown hair, kind of dumpy.
Yep.
And she... You see her. You hear her first. She's screaming. And she's screaming all kinds of crazy shit that's cracking up other people who are like going, oh, my God. But she's losing. She's yelling. She's like, he's going to put something on your ass that iodine can't take out or some shit. Yeah. You see other people laughing at her. And then she's doing this. He's going to whip your ass, sucker. Sucker. And she loves screaming, sucker. And, ah. He's going to stick to your ass like goddamn glue, pal. And I'm like, this woman's insane. She's losing it. You see her exactly when Superstar tosses him right at her. Yep. And she comes over to try to pat his shoulder. But she's a mental patient. And she's losing her shit. And we'll see what happens to her later. Because a certain character we've established comes over and calms her ass down at one point. But she's losing her shit. In fact, you see this blonde girl in the other row laughing at her. Not out of like, isn't she wonderful? But like, listen to this maniac. You see it on her face. They're cracking up. She's nuts. And I always like watching Mass Superstar. I like Mass Superstar. Yeah. I never don't like a Mass Superstar match. But holy shit, was Mass Superstar and who versus the Bland Brothers?
Yeah, it was Dick Murdoch for a while, and then he quit. And I think it was Dick Murdoch and Mass Superstar, and then it was Mass Superstar 1 and 2.
Okay. Now, because I'm like, to me, Murdoch and Superstar, that's a dream tag game.
They had a real fun feud with Doc and Gordy. DiBiase.
Yeah, we've seen some of that. That's great. But yeah, this match, it's just Al Perez, again, he's okay, but he's such a heel.
Yeah, he's a heel.
But by the end of this, the crowd is behind him.
Yeah.
You know, go Al, go. But yeah, match is what it is. You know, even the Masked Superstar can't pull off a miracle every time. But this woman at ringside is the story because it just builds with this chick.
Then we got Doc, Steve Williams versus Bobby Duncan, same date. What were you thinking of this, man?
Well, she's still there at ringside, and she's screaming, here's poor old Bobby Duncan. And I see him. You know, we used to watch him on Titans, you know, in the 70s in WWF, and he was like, okay then, not great. He's old here. This is the end of his run, I would imagine. And I felt bad for him until I wanted to do that stupid "You Still Got It" chant, because that chick is screaming all kinds of shit, just all kinds of ah, da, da. And he looks at her and he acknowledges her, and he looks over at Doc, and he's with his hands and he's saying, "Huh, was that your old lady?" And then does the indication that she's got a big ass, you know? She's like, yeah, that's your old lady. He goes, yeah, that's what you're getting at the bar. That's the rat you're getting. Yeah, that's the rat that someone has to end up with. It's, you know, like, well, everyone else left. She's good for head, I guess. At least it'll shut her up for a second. At one point, I think Tommy Gilbert, he's over at ringside telling her to shut the fuck up. He's telling her to fucking can it. And they're having the match, and it's what it is. You know, it's Bobby Duncan at the end of his career and Steve Williams at the beginning of his, and they do the best they can. But here he comes. It is Officer Isaiah McCoolicop.
Yep.
And he comes over where she is, and as soon, cause she's like, she's just gibberish. And He shows up and he stands right in front of her, and you don't hear her fucking yap the rest of the fucking match. And then on the other side of the crowd, you see a white cop. And I'm like, hey, it's like Sanford and Son. You remember the cops?
Oh, yeah, now I remember. Okay, yeah.
The black cop and like the white cop who's trying not to be racist and trying to be lame.
Yeah.
They were working the Houston Cubs. Yeah, I gave up a cool cop the first name Isaiah. I thought that fit.
Okay.
But he saunters over right in front of her, and you don't hear bip. The rest of the, they must have been warning her because she was out of control. Number one, she tried to touch the wrestlers, but she was just losing her shit, you know. And they just had to send over McCool Cop to be like, okay, we're not kicking you out, but I'm standing in front of you.
Can you imagine what you do if the Fantastics came out at this moment?
Fuck, dude, I don't want to know. I hope at some point during his run, Jim Cornette whacked her in the face with a fucking tennis racket.
I probably explained why she was doing what she was doing.
Holy shit. She's bonkers.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she's nuts. You just pick up on her immediately. Yeah, I was hoping for a quick, spirited Hoss fight here. Not what we got.
We got 7 minutes left.
Yeah, this is very plodding. Not much happening. Duncan works over Doc's arm a little bit. I like Doc's forearm shivers. It picks up late, but not enough to save his garbage match. Yeah, just not a very good strong match. Then we got Terry Taylor versus Killer Tim Brooks. Terry Taylor is no Tiger Conway Jr. this was long. I don't know what. Brooks looked like he's in some S&M gimmick to start.
What the fuck was that?
Maybe he went straight from the dungeon to this match. I it was just creepy.
Scott Steiner ripped him off. Yeah. He's wearing chainmail.
Yeah.
Like Scott Steiner used to.
Except front facial too.
But it's trimmed with black lace.
Yeah.
On Killer Tim Brooks in the mid 80s. It's the grossest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a picture of that in the magazine. There's Gary Hart just like dressed like a normal human being right next to him. And I was like, the chainmail would have been kind of cool, but what's the fuck is with the lace?
Yeah, Jesus, it was just Christ. Absolutely nuts.
And on this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, you put that, hey, come on, you put that on like Rocky Johnson or something. You go, yeah, oh, it's kind of cool. Sexy. It's kind of like Prince. Killer Tim Brooks had just seen Purple Rain, and he's going to say, I'm going to make this work for me.
Yeah, this is terrible. And the match sucked on top of it.
It was not good.
The highlight was that. And I thought Gary Hart was the best part of the match.
Well, Gary Hart was amazing. I like Terry. I liked it. Terry Taylor's gear always looks good and professional. But the chick is out there and she's yelling some shit again. And Terry Taylor is just like giving her these looks. And you see it on his face like, what the fuck is going on with this? And it almost makes you, with all the stuff you hear about backstage, about his sense of humor and everything, the fact that a guy supposedly was that witty and that, you know, funny and sardonic and a wise ass, never was able to translate that as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, ever. I mean, his heel run here was the closest it ever came. And that, we always say that's the best thing he's ever did. Or ever done, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was a master of picking up like girls at the shows. I used to remember watching him, and I didn't see him here at the Sam Houston, but I saw him when he's working WWF with the stupid Red Rooster gimmick. He'd go and just point to girls, and they'd bring him to the back for him.
Cockadoodle dude.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he glanced over and saw her and was like, oh, I'll take a few beers, but now Doc have that. But, yeah, there's just – at one point, the ref puts his hands on Killer Tim Brooks for no good fucking reason, and Gary Hart runs in and yells at Tommy Gilbert – and it almost seemed like he knew he had to do that because if this was real, a guy who's because he's playing the role of a sports manager.
Yeah.
Who will cheat, sure. You know what? Tommy Lasorda wouldn't cheat if he could get away with it. So did Billy Martin. And he's out there like in that role. He had to run in and you hear him yelling, what are you doing? You don't put your hands on the guys. And after having read his book, that would be a Gary Hart thing he would have done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it was such a weird, I'm like, why is the referee grabbing him? And Gary Hart picked up. And then the last thing of a boring match that Gary Hart was just tremendous. Terry Taylor is in the ropes. Killer Tim Brooks. He's outside the ring. I'm sorry. He's outside the ring. As the second the referee turns away to address Brooks, he starts choking Taylor with his towel. And the second the referee turns around, he's already back to the position he was in before he did it. And Taylor's coming at him. And he's breaking it up. The referee's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And Hart goes, look at him. What's the matter with him? You see how he is? And it's like, ooh, that was good.
Yeah.
And it was so smooth. It was so smooth. I was like, you know, everyone who shits on Gary Hart because, you know, the only wrestling they've got to see of him is after he was not allowed to take a bump.
Yeah.
Because he broke his back in a goddamn plane crash. You know, so everyone goes, oh, Gary Hart wouldn't even bump for anybody. He couldn't. He would have if he could. But he had the subtleties at ringside and how to move around, because you watch this little choke sequence and he's brilliant.
Yep.
And it's and believe me, it stands out in this match.
Oh god, how bad this match was.
Because usually next sort of thing you gotta look for, because you're watching you're watching Midnight's versus Fantastics and Jim Cornette's doing some cool shit, but there's lots of other cool shit when the only cool shit's going on
The
manager's expertise and Killer Tim Brooks' choice of wardrobe.
Yeah.
Don't have a great match.
You're absolutely right, man. It was boring. Had Taylor was the king of the headlock spots here, and Brooks, we get some basic heel work, but somehow gets a reaction.
But there's not a lot you could do with Tim Brooks at this point either.
No, he was old, but past it, and we see just nothing, and we see this. I think one of the other fun spots is Brooks with a hair pull sets up a head scissors, but that's pretty freaking tame. Yeah, well, throw this bad boy on the wood pile of matches. Very good.
I would recommend, if you got the service and you're listening to us and you're just checking shit out, fast forward to the choke spot, because you'll be amazed at Gary Hart otherwise. Yeah.
Yep, but at least now we get a hot one. We get the Fabs versus the Guerreros. From the same show, 12/29/85.
You shit.
Will you talk about it, Johnny?
Well, no Paul Bosch. But I have not heard the word faggot yelled this often in a wrestling match in my life, I think. The first 5 minutes, at least. That crowd is on the Fabs. And it is all faggot, faggot, you faggot. And it got me thinking, you know, and pardon me, that's what they're saying. You know, just, you know, I'm not going to say the F word. You know, that's what they're saying. It's terrible, but it's what they're saying. And it's loud. And it took me by surprise. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I've heard crowds chant homophobic shit before, but this is fucking beyond the pale. Wow. And it got me thinking, because I always wondered, why did the Fabs not wear the long tights when they came to Mid-South, and they wore these little sexy, I'm like, oh, that was it, because they knew they were coming in as heels. They were going to play that up, and those little tights play that up to that crowd, you know. And I mean, and then you hear the shrill chick, and there's lots of shrill chicks at ringside for this one. At one point, she yells at Stan. He's like, oh, what you gonna do? Go fuck him in the ass? I was like, Jesus Christ. This crowd's insane. And they eventually move beyond that, at least to their credit, because then they get on Tommy Gilbert. This referee sucks. Referee sucks. And you're mainly hearing chicks. You're not hearing a lot of guys yell. The girls are going crazy, calling the Fabs fags, booing Tommy Gilbert, and cheering the fuck out of the Guerreros, especially Chavo.
Yep.
And, I mean, everyone's cheering for the Guerreros, especially Chavo. But these chicks that you hear on this, I mean, it's all you hear, and it's shrill. I can imagine having to sit next to these chicks. Oh, good Lord. And the match is awesome. I love heel Fabs. It's so unique because they only did it here.
Yep.
And I've always been a huge Fabulous Ones fan. I always think they kind of get lost in the discussion of great tag teams. But
I totally agree. Because Memphis is not enough footage from them from Memphis. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But first time I thought when I first saw a picture of them, I'm like, okay, there's what, Chippendales guys. It's kind of, and then I saw clips of them versus the Moondogs. I was like, fuck yeah, these guys kick ass. And this match, they kicked ass. And Chavo and Hector are super over, but it's Chavo. This is his town. And the match is just fantastical. As you talk about the match, but the finish, I just want to mention, is so goddamn good because the referee's distracted. Kern, I believe it's Kern, one of the Fabs, he is on with an arm over Hector, I believe. And they're both knocked unconscious. So the other Fab, Lane, runs in and replaces Kern. But instead of going to pin the Guerrero, he pulls him over on top of him. So the referee comes over and goes, one, two, and he kicks out.
Yeah, crowd goes nuts, yeah.
And that is like, oh, that's smart. You know, it's like, oh, that, because then the referee is going to immediately not go, was this the right one? Because they don't look totally alike. And then Lane or whoever did it is kind of pleased with himself and gets caught in a fucking small package and for the 1-2-3 and place goes nuts. Fabs are furious. They keep brawling. This match ruled. This ruled.
Yep, it's a great match. The feud has been really strong in Houston, where these guys have had a lot of great matches here in Houston. We open up, and the Guerreros are wanting to push the pace because they're the Lucha team, and they get a nice shine early on. They control the Fabs with their wrestling and tags, keeping them off balance with their style. Kern takes a powder to slow the pace, which I really liked. He suckers Hector, only to have the tides turn real quickly. Kern gets him the second time, only to get reversed again. I kind of like the teases of how it looks like the Fabs are finally going to get into the heat, but they don't. The Guerreros have an answer for it. Finally, the Fabs use the number games and get the heat. Love the tease of the hot tag, only for Stan Lane, for Stan Lane eye rake. Chavo's hot tag is in fuego. The crowd is nuts for the false finish. Then even more for the actual finish. Fabs get some of their heat back post-match because they beat up the Guerreros afterwards. Good, strong 3.5-star match. Yeah, and I don't know if you know this. This is the same show we had that great Murdoch-DiBiase brawl on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Dude, I haven't heard faggot yelled that much since I'm watching my grandfather watch Joe Namath. He wore pantyhose, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, the Fabs and the Guerreros had a long feud in Houston.
And I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Now, when the Guerreros did their heel gimmick in Mid-South, you know, with the sombreros and the bandoleros, which looked awesome, did they run them as heels in Houston at that time, too? Because I just can't imagine the Houston crowd choosing to boo them.
They booed them.
They did, okay.
Well, you know, they were working the Fantastics.
Oh, okay. Chavo especially. I just, the way this crowd loves him so much, it'd be hard for them to boo him.
Yeah, but when you think about it, I mean, they were heels against Fantastics, and then
that's right.
They also feuded against Jose Lothario. They're the heels
then too.
That's true. With the hot sauce angle.
Right, that's true. But you just watch this. This is the freshest thing in my mind. Yeah. And
trust me, they want to cheer him. They don't, you know, I think they would prefer him as baby faces. But I mean, they had these type of cage matches. I think Kern and Chavo had a loser gets painted yellow match. I mean, they had a lot of gimmick matches and stuff.
Yeah. I remember just seeing an article about it in the magazines, and I mean, like, what? It was about this feud, because not everything from the territories made the magazines,
right?
You know, especially undercard stuff. But there was an issue of Inside Wrestling that covered this feud, and I remember thinking, I need to see this. I don't know these two guys, but I know these two guys, and they're not supposed to be bad guys, and these guys look awesome. So, yeah. And it lives up to it. I love this feud.
Yeah, so do I. I thought it was a great underneath feud and helped really both teams and stuff. Why don't we take a break here, and then we'll be right back.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuestas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back from break, and we're going to be looking at Johnny Valentine promo, man. Johnny, this is pretty neat, pretty historic, and I liked your take on it when we were talking about it. What do you think of this, man?
Okay, so first, it's Johnny Valentine being interviewed, and he's responding to what happened with a match with Wahoo McDaniel versus Harley Race, and he's sticking up for Wahoo, you know, and I'm like, what? Because, yeah, I was like, Johnny Valentine and Wahoo McDaniel, they've had the eternal feud, right? It's all, it's legendary. It's saved the Carolinas.
Big program in Texas.
Yeah. You know, and how stiff, you know, they were with each other. But then you look over and you see that Johnny Valentine, who we know was crippled in that plane crash, is standing, but he's got braces on. He's got his magic legs. I think Forrest would say, hold on, Mr. Valentine's got magic legs. And he, it's cool. He's like, I'm going to stand for this. I was like, that's awesome. I didn't even know he could do that. And he's basically crippled Apollo Creed. You know, he's done now, but now his fiercest rival he's ever had is fighting for the world championship against fucking Harley Race. And he's going to be in his corner in Texas where they had this legendary feud. And that's such a great bit of storytelling. It's classic storytelling. The two guys who fought their entire career, and when one's been struck down by tragedy, he is there to be in the corner. Because he was at ringside for this, in Wahoo's corner. So he's in the corner of his hated rival of all those years. I'm almost glad they never did it with Tully and Magnum.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to see that.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I would never have wanted to see that. But with these guys, I could see it. And I never thought about it. But I was like, well, who booked this? Oh, Paul Bosch. Yeah, okay. That explains it, because it's a genius bit of booking. And now his promo skills, let's face it, Greg inherited his father's promo skills.
And Greg's better.
Yeah. Exactly. I was going to say, you know, Greg was never really known for his promos, and his dad, obviously. But it didn't matter. It was completely irrelevant to once it's set in that, oh, that's what they're doing here. And I was like, this is a little time capsule bit of what a find this is.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's 3 minutes, but I was like, wow, I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, I thought it was really neat. Yeah, just a nice little footnote, you know, really neat stuff. And then we get Hacksaw Duggan winning not only he wins most popular wrestler from some weird association. He's wearing a Hacksaw Duggan shirt with a gig, with a Band-Aid on his forehead gigged. And we actually see him save Paul Bosch, which doesn't happen. Paul Bosch doesn't need too many life preservers. But old Hacksaw threw one out and saved him. Tell us all, wrap it up in a bow for us.
You're right. Well, so they show the fucking t-shirt symbol, and it's a cartoon, and so it's a, of Duggan's head. So it's a cartoon Band-Aid, which makes it even cuter, you know? But that's part of his gimmick,
which
man.
Which matches that he does have a Band-Aid on already, too.
Yeah, he's already, when he comes out, he's Spirit of 76. And so this group is called the WFIA, and it's a fan organization. I was waiting for it to be like, Houston Wrestling is giving an award for our most popular wrestler of the year. That, you do that in wrestling. But this was apparently an actual group of nerds who created a group called the WFIA and got Bosch's attention, and he is stumbling over this goddamn mouthful. Because he's not just trying to say the initials, he's trying to say, it's like the World Fan Involvement Association. It's a garbled mouthful.
Which just shows why these guys are fans.
Exactly.
And what could have come up with a good name of a promotion?
To say you know, Bosch is like, who wrote this copy?
Yeah.
What is this? That's what they're really called? Well, I'm going to have to call. And then Duggan comes in giggling. And he says, he corrects him. And he goes, it's a real big group, Paul. Like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, to lighten it up. Because he has had to come in and save Paul. And it's great. He's like, oh, thanks, fan organization, tough guy. I'm leaving, by the way, from New York, which you hate. I know. So, oh, and I'm going to be a buffoon. A very, very wealthy buffoon. So fuck you and your fucking award. But
no mid-south level brawls until I finally wrestled Vader in WCW.
When I'm old and but still, you know, he's about to leave. He's winning this fan award. But what was really neat, we talked about this, is when Duggan was a heel, how there would seem to be real, like, dislike between Paul Bosch and him.
Yeah.
He didn't show Bosch the respect that all the other heels did. And Paul Bosch would go on the air and call him a giant fucking dummy. All to his face.
Yeah.
He was like, going back to Sanford and Son, he was like, almost like Fred Sanford, big dummy.
Yeah.
But now he's a babyface and redeemed himself. And he's all Mr. Bosch, sir, and he loves him. Because, you know, behind the scenes, he probably adored each other.
Oh, yeah. He was one of the guys that Bosch asked for to be on his retirement show. You know? Got Duggan his job back in WWF.
And there you go, because you know, who's allowed to be like that with Paul Bosch in interviews? Gino, him. The people he actually loves are allowed to yell at him and get him angry, and then they have to take it from him.
Yep.
But their relationship was even better because he would always try to be kind of nice to Gino, you know, a little bit. But with Duggan, it was just this big fucking idiot over here.
Dumb SMU football player.
Yeah. So it's fun seeing them have this repartee.
Yeah.
Holy shit, all I could picture was when this went off, Bosch, like, throwing the copy at the director. Was like, ah. Oh.
What the hell?
Thanks. Yeah, but it was fun.
Yeah, but this leads us to the main event of the evening, folks. Ted DiBiase versus Michael P.S. Hayes. Glove on a pole match. And not only is it a glove, it's Ted DiBiase's black glove.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think this might be Michael Hayes' best match. Is that or the Kerry Von Erich loser leave count cage match?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're both these are just freaking tremendous. Michael Hayes has proven time and time again he's a good worker, good psychology, threw a good punch. He might have been stiff in the ring because obviously that's one of the running jokes and stuff that he'd rather be punched with his real punch than his working punch. At least with a real punch, you're expecting it. Oh man, I thought this was tremendous. I like Sunshine flirting with Tommy Gilbert early on, trying to use her feminine wiles on him to
Tommy Gilbert's like, Yeah, Tommy Gunn's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. my future stepdaughter, much better. Per Johnny Sorrow, Pete Schumacher.
Mm-hmm. And every single male wrestling fan on the planet who was alive at the time.
Exactly, yeah. That too. And this is just that show. See, she's probably with him early on to try to get the ref on their side to no avail. I love the fact how fast and furious this was early on. Ted with some beautiful looking punches. And the crowd was hot for all the pole spots. I mean, hot. Every time these guys did something with the pole, the crowd goes nuts. Hayes with some great punches of his own. I like Hayes choking Teddy down. And in a great touch before Ted starts to climb, he would, like, wipe the sweat off. I mean, I like that. It was just a smart touch because, you know what, that's smart. Get that stuff that might make you slide off the pole off. Hayes puts Ted into the pole and busts him up. All the cutoffs on the climbs have been fantastic. Hayes is working that cut. We got to get this pretty much black. It has a real back and forth nature, which feels more modern in structure in a way. Ted's comebacks were just great. I love the punch to change of the corner. I mean, that was just incredible. The sunshine spot worked. The crowd is so with Ted on the climb. Sunshine interferes and Hayes gets the glove. I love all the umbrella booking. You know, I love umbrella storytelling. You know, I've said it. I've trademarked that term. It journeys out to even the odds. Lee comes out, gives Ted the advantage. The Freebirds are out. So is Doc. We get the no finish. But this match ruled. The action, the storytelling, the ebbs and flows, the umbrella storytelling. Great, great stuff. 4-star match. It almost felt like a blow-off. Matt D would say he would even just been happy if Ted was able to knock Michael out with a punch with the Midas glove that we'll talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the card of the gold, the glove of gold. And then we get this incredible Ted promo. I'll let Johnny talk about the promo. What do you have thoughts on the match, though, man?
Okay, well, the match, we already, you know, talked about how this feud has been
epic.
Epic, but it's not just here. It's not just here and now. It's been in Mid-South before, and it was been in Georgia.
Yep.
So the Freebirds and Ted DiBiase have been feuding epically.
Yeah, it's a blood feud. It's just oil and water. It's kind of like the Barneses and the Ewings in a way.
Yeah, well, that'd be more, I guess, the Von Erichs because it's two families.
Yeah, it's true.
But
yeah.
This is, and here's the difference though, and I was thinking about this the other day. That makes me think this is more blood feud and wrestling goes is because the Freebirds were feuding with the Von Erichs, a family, gang on gang, basically. The Freebirds have been ganging up on this one guy for years and breaking his neck. They've made a habit out of breaking his neck or trying to break his neck. It's what they do. They drink, they rock and roll, and they try to break Ted DiBiase's fucking neck.
And finally, finally Ted has a partner named Doc, Steve
Doc,
Williams,
yeah, exactly.
Who's some muscle to counteract Gordy, which he's never had before when you really never. Think about it.
Yeah, I mean, and throughout those years, Ted's been a bad guy. Their paths don't cross, but when their paths do cross, they fight. And Ted DiBiase becomes a good guy. The Sunshine, obviously, you know, she came over during the great world-class purge with Ken Mantell. And it was like, what do you do with fucking Sunshine? Like, let's turn her fucking heel and throw her with the fucking Freebirds. Oh, I remember at the time going, really? Because I watched a lot of world-class. I was like, that seems so out of storyline.
Yeah, it was all because him and Buddy Roberts were drinking buddies.
They were drinking buddies, but if I was going to make up something in my head, I'd be like, she gets the world class. She said, there's Missy who she feuded with, and suddenly she's super hot, and she's a washed-up chick. She is the washed-up chick who'd go see the Freebirds perform at the State Fair and blow them behind a port-a-john. So they did it. You know. It'd be Buddy Roberts. It wouldn't be Michael Hayes. And so this is the leader of that hate-filled group that has been fucking him up all these years. Because he can – Buddy Roberts, Terry Gordy's a big dummy, but the brains of the operation is fucking Hayes.
Yes.
That's the true hate is between DiBiase and the Birds.
Yes.
You know, it's Michael P.S. Hayes. Let me tell you something, DiBiase. And He's wearing the Stars and Bar robe, and it's one of those things, I get it, I'm just like, oh, I know it's terrible and offensive, but motherfucker, it looks cool. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Right, I'm with you, yeah.
I'm just being honest. I was like, I always thought it looked kind of cool. I mean, I look at it now, and I'm like,
yeah, I know what it, I mean. It stands for, yeah,
it stands for, but when I'd see them come out and do it, or when they painted their face like that against the Road Warriors, I was a kid. I was like, that's badass,
that
man.
That is badass, yeah.
As a kid, I was ignorant. I didn't associate it. I knew the Confederacy, you know, slavery, evil, wrong, everything, but I would still buy into that argument. I'm like, yeah, but no, Lynyrd Skynyrd ain't racist. You know,
whatever. No, Luke Dukart's racist.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, it is, you know, just, it's, but it's of its day. Anyway, the match is amazing. Teddy, and he goes, again, I've seen lots of pole matches. We mentioned this before. When any modern fan, younger fan, whose only association with pole matches is Vince Russo and the running joke that became, doesn't mean the gimmick is a shitty gimmick. It can be an amazing gimmick, as we see here. And especially because when I first heard it was read, it was a pole match, I figured, you know, Ivan Putski would be on. No. I figured it'd be like a coal miner's. And I'm just going to run past that joke. And no, it's Ted's black glove. That's epic storytelling. It's epic. And I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. And Hayes gets it first.
Yeah.
And but before that, Ted's up there and they do the pull down the tight spot, and Ted's up there bare ass, and Parv is somewhere in Wales just jerking it like a motherfucker. finally.
He's with his girl and he's watching the Ted Mooney doing it in the corner of his eye.
Hands creeping down his pants while he's next to his fiance. What are you doing? Oh, pardon me. But and then the big schmoz happens, and as you say, umbrella storytelling. Everyone's in there, and it saves it for another day because it's an eternal feud. They're supposed to feud eternally, you know. And so it just, you know, you didn't see him get his hands on Hayes just yet, and then we get the promo.
Tell us about this promo. I mean, this is could be. I will say it was Ted DiBiase's greatest promo ever.
So too. Because of a certain prop that comes into it. Yeah. It's good enough without the prop, but then we see this. I was like, badass.
Yeah.
So he's talking about how bad it can get and what you can sink to. And he goes, I know how bad it can get because I went bad. He's like, I went bad once. And you people know that I have got a bag of tricks. And it pulls out, and it's a gold glove. You know, it's just a gold version of the Ted DiBiase glove. It's his good guy glove. And I'm like, and he goes, this is the Midas touch. And I was like, motherfucker, that's the best name for that gimmick there could possibly be. And I'm like, and again, I don't recall ever seeing this on their television. You know, that Midas touch gimmick didn't stick around.
Never heard of it, yeah.
I never heard of it, and it's perfect. Even for that, it's like we've always seen it's great when he reaches down to go get his bad guy glove,
yeah.
But his full transformation as top babyface of that territory, which I say he is, his glove's golden. And then we get to think, what a missed opportunity in WWF, that when he's the $1 million man with all the money and the gold, that he never cheated with a gold glove, calling it the Midas touch. That would have been tremendous. And all I can imagine is that he never thought to bring it up, because you can't tell me that Vince McMahon would not have been all over that.
Yeah.
Like a motherfucker, if someone had presented that idea to him.
Yeah.
Like that would have been even better when he was the $1 million man. But this promo, the energy and his acting,
it's fired up.
His performance, his improvisational performance, mind you, is tremendous. It's his best promo ever, I think.
Yeah, I can't think of a better one that he's done. I mean, this is top-notch babyface promo 101. He shows fire and energy. Yeah, I mean, honestly, the whole segment with the match and the promo is total gold. No pun intended. Okay, pun intended. But it was, I mean, Ted's promo work here was just off the charts, man. And wow.
It's so perfect.
Yeah, I mean, everything about this whole segment, I mean, it's like, this is just great looking. And, you know, I mean, eventually I think you feel like Ted is going to get Hayes in the cage at some point. You think he's got to get that rat bastard eventually. But it is. It's just like the feud that keeps on giving, and it's an eternal feud where he can run it. I mean, it's been run in so many different places. Yeah, he ran it in Houston, and around the loop in Mid-South, and Georgia, earlier in Mid-South. Just great stuff.
And speaking of Hayes' punches real quick, his famous left-hand jab in this one might be the most fucking brutal-looking one I've ever seen him do. Because if he really clocked him, it really looked like he clocked him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did.
It was amazing. And he was keeping his swagger throughout that whole fucking match. It's for anyone to be like, Michael Hayes. I was like, come on. Whether or not you hate the guy for behind the scenes shit or dumb shit he's done, as an in-ring and on television performer, with the exception of Doc Hendricks, and we just won't talk about that. I want to kill that gimmick like the Nazi killing Adam Goldberg at the end of Saving Private Ryan. Make it go away. And he was tremendous, tremendous performer.
Yep. Man, on this note, Johnny, just remember, everybody, NWAOnDemand.com. You can buy it, they'll get it first week free. Use the Tubio app, if you want to stream from your phone to your Roku. Johnny, anything you need to mention, anything to plug, my friend?
You know what? Just anyone, I'm sure we cross over in fandom. But anyone who has doubts about the new Mystery Science Theater 3000 that premiered on Netflix last week, the new voices take a little getting used to, but it's outstanding. I've been laughing my ass off, so okay, check them out.
I haven't checked them out yet.
They're really good.
All right, cool. And you can follow me on Twitter at Titanzo Wrestling. Everybody, man, keep on watching the wrestling. Support it any way you can. See you next week.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some. And I need justice in my life. Here it comes, the car is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red Shoes Dugan, holding his arm high, all out of breath. I hated all of Chavo's enemies. I would pray nightly for their death. Descending like fire on the people who deserved it most. All was completely unknown outside of Texas and on the West Coast.